From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. If you attend Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra concerts on a regular basis, you might have noticed a new face or two this season. One big change? Grace Browning now sits in the principal harp chair, the first new person to hold that position in over two decades. She joins us today on Backstage Pass, bringing a stack of music by women composers to celebrate Women's History Month. Lots of graceful harp is next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres, and it's so nice to have Grace Browning in our studio. We've been planning this for a while, Grace.
Yes, I am so thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I am an avid listener to WXXI, and right now it is playing at home, so my little puppy can listen. So, hello, Annie.
There you go. Now Annie is happy because Mom has spoken to her. You came to us from more southern climes, but you're no stranger to winter. You grew up in New Jersey, yes?
Exactly. I was raised in a small town called Mountain Lakes, just about 45 minutes outside New York. It was very quaint, incredibly beautiful. That is where I started the harp, along with about 1,000 other activities. I sang in the choir, and I danced, and I did a million sports. But I moved to the D.C. area just before high school, which was kind of a game changer for me as I switched harp teachers and started working with the second harpist in the National Symphony. And at that point, I finally moved up from a little tiny folk harp that came up to my knee to a full-size pedal harp. And, you know, getting to see what the full-size harp is capable of and getting to now play, you know, in orchestra and with other musicians really turned me on to the harp in a very serious way. And that's when I fell in love with the harp.
How'd you come to the harp?
Well, I have completely my mother to thank for that. She always had music in the house. And again, I was playing piano and I was singing. And she was actually singing at a school concert of mine where another parent who was a harpist came in and they worked together. And this harpist was just telling my mom about the instrument and how she was teaching her daughter how to play. And then my mom thought, well, maybe Grace could do that. And before you knew it, we had a little harp in our living room, and that was it.
Did your mother have any concept of the cost of a real harp, the big pedal thing? Because these are not inexpensive.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, you start small, and that's what I always tell my students, too. You don't have to marry the harp right away. You know, you can rent, and you can see if it's the right fit. But it's true. I mean, once you really make the switch, you make a commitment to the instrument, it's not unlike buying a car, you know?
But then you have to buy the car to put the harp
yes.
in.
Yes. Double whammy. So, thankfully, my parents were just endlessly supportive with the vehicles and the transportation and taking me to orchestra. And so I am just, you know, so, so thankful to them.
Do harps age well like a great violin or wine?
Yeah, I wish. You know, it's funny because the harp, what most people don't realize is, of course, you know, it has seven pedals, which are not like piano pedals. You know, they actually change the pitches of the strings, you know, one for each note. And each time you move a pedal, it moves actually 100 pieces of metal, gears, levers, through the base of the harp, up into the column, and then down into the neck. So it's, again, you know, 100 pieces that have to move exactly right there on the spot, which just goes to show you, you know why these are more expensive. I mean, it has to be this perfect kind of craftsmanship. But in terms of age, you know, because we have all these gears and, you know, we're almost part machine, harps don't really last, you know, usually more than 40 or 50 years. So the other thing is that there is so much tension on the soundboard from the strings. It's actually 2,000 pounds of pressure. So having organic wood and next to that kind of pressure is not really going to last forever, unfortunately.
So you have brought in a whole stack of really interesting composers. And the first composer that we're going to hear music from are arrangements by Henrietta Renier. Perhaps you'd like to quickly tell us just a little bit about this woman before we actually hear her work.
Yes, Henrietta Renier. We really have to thank for really almost the fact that I'm here today. She almost single-handedly legitimized the harp as a real solo instrument, not only by playing it fabulously, but by also composing new works for the harp, new virtuosic works that were, just sensational, and as well as arranging works. So two of her arrangements I'll play today. Arrangements actually are a big part of our repertoire because, you know, the pedal harp didn't really exist until the 1800s. So if we want access to, you know, Bach, then we're going to need to transcribe. So the first piece I'll be playing is the Pièce en Sol, a piece originally written for harpsichord, and the second, Debussy's first arabesque, written for piano.
So let's hit it, shall we? Our guest today is Grace Browning, and she's the principal harp for your Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. A couple of Henrietta Renier pieces, starting with a prelude by Bach from Partita No. 5 on Backstage Pass. That was Debussy's premier arabesque, arranged by Henriette Renier, and a Renier arrangement of Bach, the Preambulum from Partita No. 5, both played by Grace Browning on Backstage Pass, and beautifully, I might add. Debussy is so harpy. I think when we think of what harp music is, that's what we think of.
I know. You'd almost think it was written for harp. And that's the thing with transcriptions, because we can play most piano music on harp, but then we have to ask ourselves, does it sound as good as the original or better? And in a lot of cases, it really does work. Not to mention, of course, Debussy did write so many fantastic works for the harp. So perhaps he just had that kind of sound in his ear.
And perhaps it works so well. Now, when you are not playing with RPO, every now and then lately, you have been doing double duty, Grace. You have been zipping down to New York City to play with the Metropolitan Opera. What's that like?
Oh, my gosh. It's absolutely a dream. I mean, I pinch myself every time I walk up to Lincoln Center and go through the stage doors. I mean, I guess I never really imagined myself becoming kind of an opera harpist. But since, you know, my previous job with the Dallas Opera kind of set me up for a sort of, you know, familiarity with the opera repertoire, and then having Santa Fe Opera in the summers, I did actually really fall in love with opera, and having those experiences, I think, kind of paved the way for me to be called to the Met. And I mean, I still remember when I got the phone call from the principal harpist. Emmanuel Cesson is just one of the most fabulous harpists in the world. Wonderful, beautiful person. And I got his voicemail, and it was like, "Hello, Grace. This is Emmanuel Cesson from the Metropolitan Opera. I'm calling to see you." And I mean, I will always save that, because it was just, I just couldn't believe it. We are currently rehearsing for Siegfried at the Met with six harps, believe it or not.
Six harps,
yeah. You know, when it comes to Wagner, you can really never have enough of anything. And in this case, the same is true for harps. So logistically, it's really an interesting process, because, you know, first of all, just getting six harps into the pit is a feat of its own.
And I assume that this is not your harp, so they have to find harps for everybody to play.
Well, thankfully, the Met actually owns not one, not two, but six harps. So
that worked out.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, they're doing the entire ring cycle this spring, at least three full times. And for each opera, they are doing six harps. So obviously, I couldn't do more than just Siegfried, but it's been a real treat to get to go down there.
Is there a significant difference between when you play in an orchestra and when you play in an opera?
Yes, absolutely. It's a totally different game with opera, which, to be honest, I mean, I still remember the first time I played an opera. I think I was at University of Michigan, and I played La Boheme, which is, oh my gosh, I mean, you know, just so beautiful. And I remember the conductor learned my name very, very quickly, and it wasn't because I was doing so well. It's because I was just messing up all over the place. It is so hard to keep up with everything. I mean, you know, opera, it's kind of like riding a wild bull, you know? I mean, it's fast, it's slow, then it's stopping, and then you also, there's so many unknowns. You don't know what the singers are going to do necessarily. Every night's a little different, and maybe it's even a different singer than, you know, you anticipated. So that ended up being a really fun challenge. And, you know, as much as, I mean, I love symphonic work, of course, there's, you know, but having both is such a blessing, because there are some composers like Mahler, you know, who didn't write operas. So, you know, if you're going to play his music, you have to be on stage. But then at the same time, if you're only on stage, you're not going to get to play Puccini. So, you know, ideally you get a little bit of both. So it's great to have that balance.
So your love of opera is pretty much embodied by your next piece. This is by a mystery composer. Could not find anything about her. Her name is Ekaterina Valterkurina. And on Backstage Pass, we are listening to Grace Browning, the new principal harp for your Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, as she plays a fantasy on a theme of Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin. Thank you. Fantasy and a Theme of Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin by Ekaterina Walter-Kerner, one of the many women composers that Grace Browning has brought in for us to listen to on this Backstage Pass. As you mentioned, Grace, you did come in from the world of opera, from the Dallas Opera Orchestra. So why did you want to audition for the RPO?
Well, it has always been my dream to play in a full-time symphony orchestra. As much as I loved the Dallas Opera, it wasn't actually a full-time position. And while I did enjoy some of the freedom of having off weeks and getting to do my own thing, I really missed getting to play really quality music. And, I mean, the RPO, of course, I mean, it almost goes without saying, but it really is such a fantastic orchestra, truly one of the best ensembles I've had the privilege of playing with. So not only that, but we also have such fantastic programming. I mean, to get to do Mahler 7 and Shostakovich 10 in the same month, and then to get to do so many fun pops programs and fantastic education concerts. I mean, it's just such a joy to play fantastic high-quality music all the time.
So what was the audition like?
Oh, gosh. So it was kind of a crazy day. As you know, it's not always easy to fly into Rochester. So I woke up around 3 a.m. in Dallas on the day of the audition. And I had a show the day before, so that's how it goes. And I flew through Chicago and I arrived in Rochester around 9 a.m. Thankfully, I was pre-advanced to semifinals. You know, the way these auditions work, you know, they... First, there's an ad in the international paper, and so harpists all over the country and sometimes the world will then send in their resume, and in it, if they're approved, then in this case, I think there are maybe 40 people who came. So thankfully, since I had already had a few jobs, they pushed me up to the semifinal round with a few other people. And so I think by then there were maybe 15 people, and we draw numbers out of a hat to figure out when we're going to go. And, you know, they give you a list ahead of time of all the music and all the excerpts you're going to play, which is usually a few solos and a few bits and pieces of the major orchestral works, you know, Strauss, Tchaikovsky, Wagner, all that. And then after they give you your number, they just hand you a list with the excerpts you'll be expected to play. You have about 30 minutes to warm up on a harp. And that was the other thing, was that I couldn't bring my harp here because, I mean, I would have either had to ship it, which is very, very expensive, or, you know, drive it, which would have been 3 days. So instead, I just took a risk and I decided I would just play on the harps provided at the audition. But, you know, it's always a little hard playing on a new instrument. There are definitely some unknowns there. So, thankfully, after I passed the semifinal round, we were waiting around, and one of my very dear friends, who's actually subbing in the orchestra this week, she was at the audition, and she hadn't advanced, and so she actually offered to lend me her harp so that I could play.
So she didn't make finals. It, and you made it on her harp.
I did.
Well, that's a good friend.
She is a great friend, that's right, and she'll be playing the concerts this weekend. So anyway, I feel very lucky to have that, yeah.
You took over as principal harp for Grace Wong, who retired after 2 decades. It's a little pressure, you think? That's kind of big shoes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's a legacy here. And it's, I mean, perhaps I have a little bit of a head start, given that we both have the same name. So easy for people to, you know, remember who I am. but absolutely, I have so much respect for what she's done here. And it's just, you know, such an honor to get to play with such a fantastic orchestra.
So we're now going to hear one of the great pieces for harpists. This is one of those back pocket, every harpist has to play it. This is a sonata for harp. It is written by Germaine Taillefer. We'll talk a little bit about her after we listen to Grace Browning perform Germaine Taillefer's Sonata for Harp here on Backstage Pass. Thank you. Je m'entifère, sonata for harp, played for us by Grace Browning on Backstage Pass. This is Women's History Month, and Grace, Je m'entifère was really a woman among men.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the only female of the group Les Six, you know, the followers of Satie and colleagues with Poulenc and Honegger. And again, she went into music despite her father's wishes and against the expectations of many. And also eventually became actually kind of close friends with Maurice Ravel. And I believe it's, you know, she didn't write the sonata until actually 1957, which was when she was already probably in her 50s or 60s. So I have a feeling that they influenced each other, actually, both Ravel and entifère, as Ravel, of course, loves the harp. And so I can definitely see some of that maybe influence in this sonata.
You know, we think of the harp as a girl's instrument. There's always a woman playing the harp, but this was for a very long time a bastion of men.
Absolutely. You know, the history of the harp is so unique because before it blossomed into this full-size double-action pedal harp, double-action meaning fully chromatic, it was for a long time regarded as just kind of a parlor instrument. And you see it in all the old paintings. You see a little harp in the corner, and that was just meant for the women to play. And it was not regarded as a, you know, legitimate instrument for a long time. So thus the lack of repertoire. I mean, we have one Handel concerto, and we have one Mozart harp and flute concerto, which actually he wrote reluctantly and never got paid for, too. Anyway, it was actually because of women who took the instrument very seriously, and then eventually led to people like, again, Henriette Renier, who started to write legitimate music for this instrument, that, you know, we were able to move from this parlor instrument to a serious solo instrument, either in an orchestra or at the front of the stage with a concerto.
Where do you find new stuff? And we're about to hear something new. So how do you go about searching for new music to play for your harp?
Well, what's wonderful is that, you know, we're at the total opposite end of the spectrum now compared to before where, you know, no one even knew the harp or wanted to write for it. Now everyone wants to write for the harp, which is just so fantastic. I've had so many friends, whether they're composers or harpists, who have, you know, commissioned new pieces. Whether from, you know, when I was at school at Juilliard, there were many people who'd want to come up to me and say, okay, I want to write this piece for harp. Can you, you know, give me some feedback? And that is the one thing that I think a lot of composers do need, a little bit of face time with the instrument. But now, I mean, it's totally standard for new you know, orchestral commissions to have a harp part. New operas have harp parts. And what's also cool is that they're also writing for a lot of new techniques for the instrument.
So we have some interesting techniques that are going to show up in this piece by Caroline Lizard. She's Quebecois, yes?
Yes, and yes, a contemporary, just absolutely sensational harpist and composer. She's written some fantastic works for the harp. And again, as a harpist, she's able to write from it, you know, from the inside out.
So show us a couple of things that are going to appear that we will be listening to in this next piece.
So, one of our classic kind of sounds is the harmonic, which is such a beautiful sound. It has this kind of bell-like tone. Rather, instead of plucking the string normally, we use the side of our hand to kind of cut the string in half and create a harmonic, which, again, has this beautiful floaty sound. And then unique to the Lizot, we also do a little bit of pitch bending with the strings, which is so fun. So where I'm basically playing the string with one hand and using my other hand, just placing it above the pin on another side of the string and pressing into it, therefore making the pitch a little bit higher. It gives us this kind of extra-worldly sound. I just want to say a couple words about what the piece is we're going to hear. It's just so fantastic. It's called Suite Galactique. I'm going to just play the first and last movement. The first movement is called Exosphere, and it really is kind of a journey from the inside of the Earth into outer space. She writes here, "The atmospheric layer approximately 1,000 kilometers deep, where it begins, where the lightest molecules escape the effect of gravity and reach the interplanetary space. The substance is built in the low register of the harp in the earth, as if we had taken a clod of mud and extracted the water from it, and followed its molecular cycle through several transformations as it experiences in the atmosphere. Musically, an ascending feeling free of gravitational forces.
And then the second is called Scherzo del Pueblo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's listen to, we've heard a couple of things to listen for. We'll hear two movements of Caroline Lizotte's Suite Galactique on Backstage Pass with harpist Grace Browning.
Thank you.
That was the Scherzo del Pueblo, the third movement of Suite Galactique, and before that, Exosphere, the first movement of that suite, written by Carlene Lizotte, played by Grace Browning on Backstage Pass. Very cool piece.
So fun, right?
Oh, yeah. So fun. So fun. So let's talk a little bit about teaching, shall we? Because you had a pretty considerable studio when you left Texas.
I did. I had 14 beautiful Suzuki students. I was not myself trained Suzuki style, but when I was trained for it, I really developed a deep respect for it. And I especially love the family component, especially when they're so little. It's really hard to expect a little five-year-old to go home and practice closing her thumb 10 times a day, you know. So having the mother or father there really creates a beautiful opportunity for the parent and child to work together, and then, of course, for us to kind of have this beautiful Suzuki triangle. So that was a really fun experience, and I do miss them.
Yeah, it was, that must have been a tug to walk away from that.
Yes, now thankfully they understand. I mean, I performing is really my biggest passion. But of course, I adore teaching, and I would absolutely love to continue. I've been actually getting to do some master classes this year at NYU and at Juilliard, which is really fun to start, you know, kind of teaching at the next level. But I learned so much from starting with the young ones. I mean, it really makes you question all the basic elements of how do we approach the instrument, how do we get a beautiful sound. What is a beautiful sound? And, you know, so very fond memories.
You made a point on your website, gracebrowningharpist.com, to thank your teachers and your mentors.
Oh, yes.
Who are they? What did they give to
you?
Oh,
my gosh, so many. I've been so lucky to have fantastic teachers everywhere. First, Elizabeth Blakesley, my first teacher in the D.C. area, absolutely opened my eyes to the world of harp and orchestra. So that I'll be endlessly grateful. And of course, I spent a wonderful 2 years here at the Eastman School with Kathleen Bride. And it was so special to spend some time here and to absorb that Marcel Grangeny tradition with the wonderful harpist with whom she studied. And then my teachers at Michigan, Joan Holland, Lynn Aspness, just wonderful, beautiful people. And then getting to study at Juilliard with Nancy Allen, principal harpist of the New York Philharmonic, absolutely was a real game changer. I mean, to be honest, I feel like I was kind of a mess when I went to grad school, and I was, you know, moving to the city and everything. It was my first time living in a big city, and I was just so intimidated, you know. And it wasn't because the school was not warm and friendly. It is. It's just more the kind of the way that you talk to yourself, you know. Sometimes you can be your own kind of worst enemy.
So what do you tell your students to keep themselves from becoming their own worst enemy, Grace?
Yes. Well, it's so important to just, you know, mind your self-talk. I mean, I had to spend a few years. I mean, it's always a progress, but I had to spend a few years actually reading about, you know, performance psychology. And I mean, there are so many similarities between the way that we approach, you know, musical instruments and having to execute to the way that athletes have to execute. You know, Olympic divers, they have one dive, they got to nail it right there on the spot. And so, you know, going into all these auditions knowing that you only have 5 minutes to get the job or lose means that, you know, you just need to practice really visualizing yourself, playing your best, really seeing it happen, and also really believing that you can do it. And so again, I have Noah Kageyama to thank. He was my performance psychologist for a long time. And also, if anyone else out there is struggling with nerves and getting in your head, I would highly, highly recommend the book by, of course, now I'm going to forget it, Performance Psychology. It's Audition Success by Don Green. There we go. Fantastic, fantastic book.
I want to thank you so much for coming in and playing for us and bringing in such wonderful music, Grace.
Thank you so much for having me. It's just a joy to be a woman in music here with you and with all these amazing composers. So thank you for having me.
Welcome to our town. Our executive producer for Backstage Pass is Jean Fisher. Today's show is directed by Michael Black. Our audio technicians are Andrew Croucher and Robert Braden. Many thanks again to RPO, Principal Harp Grace Browning. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.